Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Barstool Biology. I'm your host Gary Somerville and I'm back after a short hiatus, which is a bit of an understatement. Being in the lab most days, moving house and becoming a dad. That's my daughter Ella, 4.5 months old. It's taken up just a bit more of my time, but I'm delighted to be back talking science into the mic. We're seeing several SARS-CoV-2 variants pop up in places like South Africa and the UK, so I thought it's important to touch on the topic of mutations and what that means with this virus going forward. When we hear mutant, images like X-Men characters spring to mind, where superhumans are shooting energy blasts from their eyes or transforming into wolves and slicing up bad guys. But the reality of mutations isn't nearly as sexy as Hollywood makes out. But they are equally interesting. RNA viruses mutate, just like anything that's trying to survive at all costs. And now we are starting to see mutant strains rise to the top of the food chain and spread across countries. So let's get into it with this episode, Mutations, as I serve up science. So what actually are mutations? Well, in biology, a mutation is a permanent alteration in the DNA sequence, the A's, T's, G's and C's that make up our genetic code. You may remember from episode 1, they can vary in size and can affect anywhere from a single letter change in a gene to a large segment of a chromosome that includes multiple genes. Mutations happen all the time in human cells. Most are minor mistakes in our genetic code and don't cause any problems. But every now and then, a mutation comes along and starts causing cells to misbehave, which can lead to different types of disease, ranging from cancer to cystic fibrosis. So quickly recapping molecular biology 101, double-stranded DNA becomes single-stranded RNA eventually, and that RNA becomes proteins. These proteins are chains of amino acids, of which we have 20 of, and each one of them is 3 letters of genetic code. So for example, the code of the amino acid glutamate is GAA. And no, that doesn't mean Gaelic Athletic Association in this context. When our cells read GAA, out pops a glutamate into the chain of amino acids, and these are pretty much like a set of rosary beads. This happens until the sequence arrives at a stop signal. When the chain is complete, it's folded into a very specific shape and sent off to wherever it's needed. And using data available from whole genome sequencing, which is what I do a lot of in work, which is the sequencing of our entire genetic code, the human genome mutation rate is estimated to be about 1.1 by, get ready, 10 to the minus 8. In other words, about one single letter in every 100 million, which is pretty damn good. But still not perfect.
Pump those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers in this
round. Now we know the basics. Let's cover the main types of mutations. The first are single base substitutions, which are the most common type. An example is when a T becomes a C or vice versa. So remember that A's and T's stick together, as do G's and C's. So when a single base changes, the resulting amino acid is going to change because its 3-letter code is now different. Secondly, we have deletions. So a deletion occurs when one or more base pairs are lost from the DNA sequence. This causes the sequence frame to be altered, resulting in a bit of a garbled message when it comes time to produce a protein, and a non-functioning product is the result. So a deletion of a group of 3 letters, otherwise known as a codon, results in a protein missing one or more amino acids. And lastly, insertions. An insertion of additional bases into a genetic code may lead to a frame shift where the chain of amino acids changes as a result. Combinations of these insertions and deletions can lead to a variety of outcomes and are also possible where the resulting protein made by the gene may not function properly. So these are the different types of gene mutations. Let's classify them into 2 groups. The first are hereditary or germline mutations, which are inherited from a parent and are present throughout a person's life in pretty much every cell in the body. They're known as germline mutations because they are present in the parent's egg or sperm cells, which are also called germ cells. When an egg and a sperm cell unite, the resultant fertilized egg cell receives DNA from both parents. If this DNA has a mutation, the child that grows from the fertilized egg will have the mutation in each of his or her cells. Let's dive into an example of one of these. An example of a hereditary mutation is in the breast cancer type 1 susceptibility protein, which is encoded by the BRCA1 gene. BRCA1 is a human tumor suppressor gene, and its job is to help repair damaged DNA or destroy cells if DNA cannot be repaired. So if BRCA1 itself is damaged by a mutation, damaged DNA is not repaired properly, and this increases the risk for breast cancer. And a defective BRCA1 protein is unable to fix damaged DNA, leading to mutations on other genes. So these mutations can accumulate and may allow cells to grow and divide uncontrollably, which is the characteristic of a tumour cell. Females with an abnormal BRCA1 or BRCA2 sister gene have up to an 80% risk of developing breast cancer, and they have an increased risk of developing ovarian cancer, which is about 55% of females with the BRCA1 mutation and about 25% for females with BRCA2 mutations. The second type are called acquired or somatic mutations and occur at some time during a person's life and are present only in certain cells, not in every cell in the body. These changes can be caused by environmental factors such as UV radiation and smoking, or can occur if an error is made as DNA copies itself during cell division. Acquired mutations in somatic cells, which means cells other than sperm and egg cells, they can't be passed to the next generation. So an example of an acquired mutation is actually one I studied as part of my PhD, and it's a mutation in a gene known as BRAF. The most common and well-known mutation in BRAF is called V600E, in which the amino acid, and you know what they are by now, valine, which is the V, is substituted by glutamate, which I mentioned earlier, which is E, at amino acid position 600 because of just a single DNA letter change where an T becomes an A. Simply put, the role of BRAF is transmitting chemical signals from outside a cell to the cell's nucleus, and it's part of a pathway called the RAS-MAPK pathway, which controls lots of important functions in the cell. Specifically, it regulates the growth and division of cells, the process by which cells mature to carry out particular functions, cell movement, and the self-destruction of cells, aka apoptosis. Chemical signaling through this pathway is essential for normal development before birth. So genes like BRAF, they're known as oncogenes because when they are mutated, oncogenes have the potential to cause normal cells to become cancerous, which in this case, with a V600E mutation, the mutation renders it always active and keeps sending signals for cancer cells to survive and divide, thus forming tumours. So there actually is a drug that specifically targets V600E mutation. So this is pretty important going forward as more personalised therapies get developed by pharma companies. They're targeting very, very specific changes to our genetic code, which is amazing for personalised medicine. Okay, that's the spiel on mutations in humans. Let's talk about viral mutations. The main concern about mutations in the SARS-CoV-2 virus is in the spike protein region, which the virus uses to latch onto our cells via the ACE2 receptor, which I covered early on in this podcast series. Just like influenza and other RNA viruses, which are constantly evolving, SARS-CoV-2 will undergo antigenic drift, which is genetic variation in viruses. And this arises by accumulating mutations in genes coding for surface proteins such as the spike. And we see this every year with influenza because although it's not a new pathogen, antigenic drift makes it less recognizable to our immune systems. So this has made the development of a universally effective flu vaccine particularly challenging. And it's possible vaccines for coronaviruses will have to be seasonal like the flu if the changes in the spike protein are significant enough to evade the antibodies produced by our immune's B cells.
I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
And it seems like every day in the news we hear about new variants of the virus. So let's crack into them. The first one, the B117 variant, emerged with an unusually large number of mutations that spreads more easily and quickly than other variants. And it was first detected in the United Kingdom in September 2020 and is now highly prevalent in London, South East England and Ireland, more than likely due to travel over the Christmas period. And it's been since detected in numerous other countries around the world, like here in the US and also Canada. So one of the more important changes in this variant is called N501Y, a change from N, which is asparagine amino acid, to tyrosine, which is the Y at amino acid site 501. It's concerning because of its position inside the spike protein's receptor binding domain, which binds to ACE2 receptor in our cells. Mutations in this particular domain can actually change antibody recognition and allows the virus to bind to our respiratory cells tighter and leads to the virus becoming more infectious. The good news is that both Pfizer and Moderna's mRNA vaccines have shown significant protection against this variant. So that's the first one. The second one is called 1351 and has emerged independently of the variant detected in the UK and has this additional spike protein mutation called E484K. This was found in South Africa in early October and announced in December, when the country's health minister said the strain seemed to affect younger people more than previous strains and may have contributed to a surge of infections and hospitalizations across South Africa. This lineage carries many mutations in the spike protein and includes some changes linked to weakened antibody activity against the virus. So again, Moderna quickly carried out experiments testing its vaccine against this variant. And initial data shows their vaccine still offers protection against it. However, the vaccine produced levels of antibodies that were about sixfold less than other variants. So there's definitely some diminishing efficacy there against this particular strain. Likewise, Pfizer and scientists from the University of Texas, they checked it out against the variant as well, their vaccine against the variant. They showed a less than twofold reduction in antibody levels, indicating that the vaccine would likely be effective in neutralizing this variant of the virus carrying these mutations. More recently, down in South America, a variant called P1 emerged in early December in the city of Manaus, Brazil, and by mid-January had already caused a massive resurgence in cases across the city of 2 million people. The worrying news here is that a study of blood donors published in the journal Science, very prestigious peer-reviewed journal, indicated that about 76% of the population actually had already been affected with SARS-CoV-2 by October 2020, which should have put them close to herd immunity. So therefore, this variant must contain a set of additional mutations that may affect its ability to be recognised by antibodies if so many people are still getting sick there. And just a few days ago, actually about a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago now, the Minnesota Department of Health and Health said America's first known case there involved a Minnesota resident with recent travel history to Brazil. And the variant was detected through genomic sequencing, yay for sequencing, of random nasal swab as part of a surveillance program there in Minnesota. And more than likely is undergoing tests against the major vaccines as we speak. And lastly, about 2 weeks ago, America, fuck yeah! Can't leave the US out, a preprint came out reporting a novel strain emerging in Southern California. Most current cases in the catchment population of LA fall into two subtypes of this variant. 20G is one of them. It's made up 24% of total sample sequenced in that area. This is the predominant subtype currently in the United States of that variant. And the second one, a relatively novel strain, 20C, that one's called, making up 36% of total samples tested. That's actually defined by five concurrent mutations in the spike protein, which is a characteristic that it shares with both the UK and South African strains. The L452 mutation that this strain has is within a region that's been found to be markedly resistant to certain antibodies to the spike protein. So mutations in this domain may be resistant to serum from COVID patients who have had the infection or post-vaccination, so people that have had the vaccine and then given their antibodies to test out against this variant. But more studies will be ongoing, no doubt, and more data will emerge. As you may have guessed, These variants are popping up where there's pretty much uncontrolled outbreaks and spread of the virus. Without significant measures to stifle it, several subtle mutations are allowed to circulate in the community until the mutation lottery hits the jackpot and Mother Nature selects the best candidate to rise to the top of the food chain and continue the spread of this virus. These are important observations to note going forward as public health systems and drug companies develop vaccines to fight this horrible invisible foe. The good news is that mRNA-based vaccines can be redesigned to tackle these variants much quicker than traditional vaccines, as it's pretty much just a change in the genetic code for the virus's spike protein. So that's good news. Hopefully we get a handle on this virus in 2021 and humans are back on top.
Kick his ass, Seabass!
So as always, I'll wrap up this episode with a shot of science. Shot. And this time your little nugget of mind-blowing science is as follows. Biologists have estimated about 37 trillion cells, trillion with a T, in the human body, and approximately 2 to 3 trillion of these divide each day. So the time it took you to listen to this, that's a few million cell divisions right there. Pretty crazy numbers all going on in our bodies as we're out recording and listening to a podcast. So that's your shot of science for episode 4. And that will do it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in to Barstool Biology episode 4 and learning all about mutations. Hopefully when you hear more about these strains and variants that are inevitably going to be popping up over the coming weeks and months, you'll understand what's going on. Shout out to everyone who has subscribed so far, and apologies for making you wait so long for another episode. I also appreciate anybody who has given fantastic feedback in the reviews. If Barstool Biology is your new favourite science podcast, a cheeky little review about why you like it on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to these podcasts would be amazing. As always, feel free to share the podcast with family, friends, pets, whoever. I'm Gary Somerville. This has been Barstool Biology. Tune in next time for more facts, not feelings, where I will be serving up science.